All right, you're back in the DFSR here with an NFL podcast. It's Tuesday, September 18th. I'm Doug Norrie, that is.
James Davis.
We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com. You know how it is, DFSR.com/NFL. It's going to get you that free three-day trial to our projection system. It used to be seven. You missed out on that, but you still get it for free for 3 days. It's optimal lineups, FanDuel, and DraftKings. Has all kinds of filters in there, upside and floor features, stacking. You can, you know, obviously you're going to be able to filter out by game slates, but that's pretty industry standard. Then it's also going to include leaderboard stuff, members only chat, premium articles, all undercovered under one subscription package, free for 3 days, and then just $29.95 a month after that. I think it's one of the best deals you find in the business. Go check it out, dfsr.com/NFL will get you started. Week two is in the books. I was so tired by the end of Sunday. I tried to write a recap article. I got two thoughts into it and just basically gave up because I was mostly just like trying not to find another way to write 500 words about Patrick Mahomes. This was going to be the mea culpa territory. I just couldn't. I'll take the L. I couldn't have been more wrong. It's 1 week, obviously. I railed in words and on podcasts about how I thought he was the hype train had run completely out of control and his efficiency just really wasn't going to keep up with the touchdowns. The touchdowns kept up and he just got way more efficient. I mean, the guy just was awesome. I don't know what to say. Like, I hate to just overreact on 1 week, and I don't think I did after week one, and then I hate to go and overreact after week two, and it's hard not to because you looked at this game where he basically just picked apart the Pittsburgh defense and just couldn't throw an incomplete pass, got other guys involved. I mean, what do we make of Mahomes now? Do we put him as the highest projected quarterback going forward? Is he that good? Is there truth somewhere in the middle? I'm all flummoxed because this is probably one of my worst calls that I've had since we started doing this job, and I'm totally willing to admit it, and I just really kind of want to know where to go from here.
I hear it in your voice, man. I'm so sorry. I think it's probably somewhere in the middle. I think on one hand, I think the hype train is still probably running out of control. I still think that if you're going to throw the ball farther downfield than everybody else, you just won't have as much efficiency. And, you know, maybe he's a master of making those good kinds of mistakes where, you know, if you just only throw the ball out of bounds, you're never going to give up interceptions. I have to believe that 10 touchdowns in his first 50 passing attempts in the NFL is above expectation. That seems to me to be a fairly, you know, reasonable case. I still think, you know, the fact that they scored so many points and he only attempted 28 passes, that's, again, seems to suggest more limited upside than what we've seen so far. I highly expect that he'll be too expensive based on, again, almost certainly hitting the upper end of any reasonable expectation for him. And he's way better than almost, you can't go too far out on a limb here because it is just one more game added to the sample size here, but this game suggests that we were much closer to wrong than we were to right on our take last week. So, you know, that's kind of where I'm leaning now. I still think people are going to be overly enthusiastic about him. I still think I'm not going to personally play the guy. The Pittsburgh was one of the worst defenses in the league last year in terms of yards per attempt allowed through the air. So, you know, it's not like he did this against Jacksonville or something like that. Not that you need to. You're only going to play guys against the bad teams, right? Plenty of quarterbacks had great matchup last week and didn't do anything close to what Mahomes did. But, so I guess I'm kind of middle of the road here. I think he's way better than we suggested and probably not as good as everyone's articles are going to suggest this week,
too. Yeah. You know, I made two adjustments on his projection that I had not done, mm-hmm. and that was I did not adjust the touchdowns at all. I did adjust his average yards per attempt that we had him at, and not anywhere close to what he's throwing right now, which is like 10.5 yards per attempt, because I don't think that's sustainable. But it was, we had him, we were probably too low, judging by, like, too low based on sort of like Casey's historic offense with Alex Smith, maybe with a little bit higher, and that clearly is not the case. So I think it's fair to have increased his yards per attempt. I did not touch the touchdowns because I think they're crazy, and I don't think that he can sustain those. No. And now he comes in as, even just honestly updating that just into what I consider to be like a reasonable expectation, he's pretty far up there in terms of overall projected points in our system. He's also the most expensive quarterback this week on FanDuel, 8,900. I was going to list all the guys he's more expensive than, but then the list was going to be everybody. So, whatever. So he's now 8,900. It's another great matchup. San Francisco has shown that you can put up points against them. They pay at a really fast pace, so he stands to touch the ball a lot. They have the highest implied total. It's creeping up over 31 right now. No other team is over 30. So it's just going to be another interesting spot with Mahomes here. the biggest problem you can have in the NFL in terms of NFL projections, I'm going to say it's just about every single week, because I'm mostly just trying to keep myself grounded in how we do this, is overreacting to single games. It's why a lot of times you'll see, from us included, you'll see picks for the week following the guy having a good week, right? Like, it's just sometimes it's hard not to, even by just bumping up Robert. Sometimes it's correct.
It often makes sense. And that's where this gets so tricky, right? Because, one of our chatters was concerned about playing Quincy Enunwa last week based on the same sort of opinion that you're sharing, right? Which is that, good Lord, it's 1 week and everyone calm down. And then, he just wound up getting tons of targets, could have had even a much bigger week, still had a good, very good game on his $5,000 price tag. And if you didn't play him in cash, you probably got burned. And there's going to be plenty of guys, and actually I have a lot of fairly hot takes in terms of stuff we learned from last week that I think we should adjust our expectations on. But yeah, you're going to, the art to football is knowing when to make something of a big week last week or a bad last week. And that's what makes football such an interesting sport, because I will say, for my money, it's the sport where things change the most when the least happens, if that makes sense. So like in basketball, it's pretty unlikely that a team will just decide, okay, the plan for today is just to give Kyle Korver five times as many threes as he did yesterday, right? Like, it mostly comes down to were you open, just basically, and mostly just comes down to historical record. Like, how have we used you in the past? It's pretty much going to average itself out. Baseball's the same way. Like, Giancarlo Stanton's is still only going to get five plate appearances, even in the best games, for the most part. Football isn't that way. Your coach decides. It would be like if, the Yankees could just decide, today we're just going to give Stanton 10 at-bats. That's what makes football so interesting. So I don't see anything on the Mahomes side that suggests we're going to give Stanton 10 at-bats territory. Like, there's no new opportunity. We didn't learn anything new positively about him that would suggest that he can maintain that price tag. But I do think there's a lot of guys who we did learn a lot new about that we probably can adjust upward.
Like I said, the one place I was fine adjusting was the yards and nothing else. The other guy I wanted to bring up here, by the way, Mahomes, not the highest scoring quarterback, even in the game that he was playing, outscored by Ben Roethlisberger fractions of a point. But Roethlisberger also took Roethlisberger 60 passing attempts to get there when it only took Mahomes 28 passing attempts to get to the same amount. Pittsburgh's offense just once again playing from behind. The other guy that had another huge week, not as big as the first week, but still probably just into the discussion of how much do we need to take this guy seriously?
Fitzpatrick.
Fitzpatrick just had another huge game, 30 fantasy points. Also didn't have to do a ton to get it, only 33 attempts. Among the highest scoring quarterbacks of the week, he, Matt Ryan, and Mahomes just had significantly less passing attempts than almost every other guy was 45 or above, something like that. Mm-hmm. And Mahomes was 28, Matt Ryan was 28, and Fitzpatrick was 33, throws four touchdowns. What do we make of him? He's another one, yards per attempt are just kind of through the roof. He's getting the long ball is just getting completed over and over again. Where do we make of Fitzpatrick? Is he a real commodity here? Do we want to make adjustments on him based on kind of what they're doing, or is he another one where you can maybe go a little too overboard?
I maintain that it's going to be hard for these quarterbacks whose primary targets are high variance downfield receivers. It's going to be hard for them to maintain efficiency going forward. So I share the same concern about Fitzpatrick that I do about Mahomes. I do think Fitzpatrick, it's a little strange because we just have such a long track record on him being less than this, and he's playing with two guys. Like, you saw Jackson go out there last week, catch four balls for 129 yards. Like, can we really credibly say that that's the plan? Like, that's what we should expect. OJ Howard for them last week, three catches for 96 yards and a touch. Right. Is he going to be another guy that they add to the mix there? And then, Evans actually just catches 10 balls. I don't know. I'm still going to temper my enthusiasm on Fitzpatrick. I'm still going to assume that most people are going to be more bullish on the upside than I will be. But it's very clear with this receiver core, he is utterly capable of just going off and not having to do much in order to get there. And that's going to leave him in very solid big tournament play. My suspicion would be give him a week to come back down to earth at some point, because he just has to, based on his track record and these receivers that he's throwing to. And then he'll be a very, very nice big tournament target after that.
Yeah, and that's even if he's starting when Jameis comes back. Because Jameis, I think, is supposed to come back week five. The coach was not committed to saying who was going to start when it comes back, which is probably a bad sign for Jameis. It'd be insane to think that Fitzpatrick would be pretty bad, pretty damn bad over the next 2 weeks, yeah. I think, to just lose to cede that starting position. And I get that it's a weird thing when a guy's, I mean, well, I was going to say out for injury, but I guess if you're out for like another violation, I don't know, it's a little more excusable. I don't know, whatever. It's like the unwritten code in NFL about when guys are starters, if they should be starters when they come back.
Can I give you a guy first before you just list every guy?
I'm not going to list every guy. I'm just going to look at him. Well, you want to make it seem like you have a guy? Go ahead. You have a guy.
I would like to list some guys. I feel like we're here on the Recap Podcast. You just get to list all your guys, and then you're like, hey, I just listed seven guys. And you have any
and
guys?
And then I say we're at a half hour, and I call it, and we get
exactly. Come on. So, well, a guy that I'm curious to know your take on, because I knew this is someone you were pretty bullish on going into the season, had a rough week one, but broke out last week, was Kirk Cousins. I mean, he and Thielen and Diggs didn't look like they were unfamiliar with each other last week, right. With Cousins being one of the top overall scoring quarterbacks and Thielen and Diggs both ranking in the top five in terms of receiving yards, and Thielen just having utterly elite targets as well. Is this just a team we can count on going forward? I mean, yeah, they got a little bit of benefit playing into overtime there, but both were just phenomenal in terms of fantasy production.
Yeah, they got game scripted really well because they were losing by 13 in the third quarter, so they kind of had to bump up the air attack for sure. So I think that definitely helped in the overall pass attempts. I liked Cousins. My concern only with Cousins is with any quarterback who has what looks to be a very balanced offense is that these are sometimes quarterbacks that I'm not overly enthusiastic about playing just because they're such a good team and there are so many ways where they're just winning these games, right? Like they have a couple good running backs. They have a very good defense. And with teams like that, there are just going to be games where he just only has to throw the ball 30 times to essentially win. And I think that is my own.
Dalvin Cook only had 10 carries in an overtime game.
Well, what I'm saying is they were losing, though.
Aren't half the teams losing at any point in the third quarter? Like, I don't know. I feel like that's not. I'm a little slower to give them the balanced attack label versus like some of these other teams, like, you know, Kansas City or something like that. I don't know that we've seen quite as much. Like, they went into overtime and Cook still only
had
10 total.
I'm not saying it didn't happen, and I disagree with you that half the teams are going to be losing because not all teams.
Well, half the teams are going to be losing. I guess some teams could be tied.
Sorry. Okay. Yes, by mathematics, that statement is correct. When we break it down by teams, I would make the assumption over the course of the year, more often than not, Minnesota will be winning at halftime in their games. Like, I'm just saying, that's assuming all teams are equal, and that's incorrect. So
they're going to be in a position to be coming from behind less. I hear what you're saying.
That's all I'm saying. And so I like Cousins. This is not a knock against Cousins, by the way. I think he's a very good quarterback. He has great weapons, and for sure that, you know, if their defense was a little worse, or like their running game was a little worse, I think we'd have him for more. I can sum it up here. It's going to be rare for me to project him for enough pass attempts to, along with some of his peers, to like get him over the hump and turn to being like an every week cash game quarterback. That's all. Like, I think like right. There's some teams that are just going to project the throw of the ball a little bit more because their defenses or their pace or just things are a little bit worse. Like Garoppolo, I think he's just going to throw on average more passes per week than Cousins will. I'm kind of picking names out of a hat here, but right. So I think it's not a knock on him. It's really just saying, you know, in a vacuum, do I want to play a guy week to week that could be up, you know, by 15, or that's a weird number. They could be up 14 going into a halftime, and they have two good running backs that they can just kind of rely on. That's all. So it's not a knock against Cousins, more a knock against maybe scheme and how I think their games will script out going forward more often than not. Okay, you have seemingly a never-ending list of guys that you want to talk about and get my opinion on. So we can just keep going. In the interest of time, why don't we just – you can pick my brain for as much as you want to on this podcast.
So just so we're clear here, I get the honor of bringing up my never-ending list of guys to you, and then you're going to provide – okay, so here's a question I want to ask you about. So, I mean, we talked already about some guys who came out and had some big weeks, you know, some unexpected, some looking pretty good. There were some quarterbacks who really underperformed this week. I mean, some like Tom Brady, you know, running up against the teeth of the Jacksonville defense. I don't think people are going to make too much of that. But some of these other guys that we were, you know, kind of kicking around as comeback candidates this season, Andrew Luck, you know, Alex Smith in an offense in Washington didn't have a very good week. What do you make some of these underperforming guys?
Okay, so we started Smith in cash, and right. I was pretty comfortable with the decision going in based on his efficiency and how poor Indianapolis has looked in terms of the D over the last couple of seasons, specifically week one. Most of that ended up being correct. Like, he was still very efficient. He completed something like 75% of his passes, and threw 46 times. If you told me ahead of time that he was going to throw 46 times playing from behind, and I would say that that was going to look great on paper. He just couldn't throw a touchdown. And the touchdown being so important, that was actually where we got burned on Smith. He was really just a one touchdown, which I think is a reasonable expectation for him in a game where they're coming from behind. He's throwing this many times. One touchdown away from basically hitting value. I'm still fine on Smith. My only the problem with Smith is the thing that I expected to maybe be a problem, and that he just doesn't throw the ball downfield at all. And so when his average yards per attempt is like, oh man, it was so low. It was like 3.4, some insanely low number. Man. That in a game where they're losing, like he basically has to, like this is like you have to try right now. You got to try to throw downfield, right? Because like you're losing by two scores, coming from behind. They had the ball plenty of times in the fourth quarter, and still it's dink and dunk, Chris Thompson, 14 targets. Like I get that things are covered down the field, and Indianapolis can kind of play that game. If Smith's not going to take those chances, even in this game, they script out perfectly for him to just try to start throwing the ball downfield. Yeah. I'm very pessimistic about what his numbers look like going forward. They can make adjustments, but this is not a guy who's ever really had to throw or wants to throw downfield. So
players in the NFL threw for a touchdown last week, and Alex Smith was not one of them.
Yeah, one of them was the safety for the Titans. So like on the punt the punt fake. So that's my concern. It was something I talked about in the cash game write up. If I'm being fair, it was one of the reasons I was more bullish on him for just cash games, because I was like, he doesn't throw picks, right? Like he's going to complete passes. The yards can be there, especially if the game stays close, and he just really couldn't get into the end zone. Luck was kind of the same thing. He didn't have to do a ton. They did run the ball more than they probably expected to. They ran the ball 28 times with the running backs basically splitting carries. They were never really at risk of being down in this game. It's a good sign that he targeted Hilton downfield a little bit more with 11 targets. He really spread the ball out. I have the same feeling about Luck after week one. Like this game didn't change me for the better or for the worse on Luck. I think he's just falling into that possibly just average quarterback territory.
Yeah.
And we would need to see a pretty significant price drop and a great matchup. And
we're not worried about Luck going back into $9,000 QB territory anytime soon.
I don't think it's going to happen. He's not throwing the ball. He's not throwing the ball downfield enough. It's just not really happening from there. So I don't think that's short of just a game plan switch. I just don't think it's going to happen.
Sure. Cool. Well, I mean, that's my list of quarterbacks, dude. I didn't say I had an insane list. Okay. There's more that I'm going to bring up at the other positions. Okay. So I just don't want to give away everything just yet.
Guys that probably people did overreact to after week one, Matt Ryan's bad game against Philly. He turned it right back around in week two. It was 23 for 28. He ran for two touchdowns. I guess he didn't. Did he throw for a touchdown?
Two touchdowns. Don't count him running for two touchdowns a week.
Exactly, right. So I'm not worried about the two. I'm not worried about the two rushing touchdowns. That's not going to really repeat itself. It was good to see he was efficient, just kind of getting back to being able to complete passes and the two touchdowns. So maybe there was a little bit of an overreaction for him. And otherwise, no one else really kind of stood up. I mean, that's a pretty long list of quarterbacks, I think, that like to have opinions on. And again, quarterback's one of the ones where you're going to have the fewest, or you're in the least amount of just week-to-week big changes, because quarterbacks are just the most consistent guys, and they kind of, and that's why they're just always, I mean, for our system and probably for most people, they're always just more than probably other positions, because they're all so close, it ends up just becoming opponent dependent.
Yeah, and right. I mean, occasionally we're going to play that guy who subs in for the starter, you know, but right, by and large, it is going to be an opportunity thing. But that's also why, like early in the season, these arrow up, arrow down moments for quarterbacks, I think, are more significant now than they will be. Like in week 11, you shouldn't react badly to a week 10 performance almost ever. But in week 2 from week 1, with so many guys changing scenery, Kirk Cousins, you know, Case Keenum, Sam Bradford, like a lot of Andrew Luck, there were a lot of questions around the quarterback position going into week 1 and into week 2. And I still think we are still learning. Patrick Mahomes, we still are learning who these guys are. So I think it's okay to spend that much time on quarterback in a reaction podcast for week 2.
What do you make of only one running back in week 2 saw more than 20 carries, and that was Joe Mixon, and he's hurt now. He saw 21 Ooh. Carries. Gurley was the next closest guy. He had 19. There's a few 18, 17s, a bunch of 16s, and then really, you know, no one more than 15. Really, I mean, is this just a kind of a one-week anomaly? We didn't see the same thing in week 1. We just did see guys getting carries. Do we make anything of that? And I have some specific guys that maybe we can start really properly reacting on. But in terms of just a bird's eye view of the week, are we worried at all that no one really saw what I would consider to be elite usage in both the passing and specifically running attack?
Yeah, so the running back trends for this week, I actually did think were pretty noteworthy. So, I mean, you mentioned week one. Week one didn't see that many rushing attempts either. We had five guys with 20 carries or more, and similar kind of trailing off after that. And some of those guys were ones that we knew weren't going to sustain anyway, like Lamar Miller, Adrian Peterson, Carlos Hyde, like, you know, guys that weren't going to really pique our fancy in terms of guys we wanted to play at our DFS running back position. I think what we're seeing is that, unlike the days of old, and by the way, two of the running backs with more than 20 carries were in that overtime game in Cleveland. So I think we're seeing that the days of yore when people would just give their, you know, bell cow, is that what they call mm-hmm. bell cow back, oh, yeah. 20 plus carries a game, are sort of gone. And now it's mostly game script dependent. So a lot of the guys that had a lot of carries in the first week were just on teams that were randomly in games that they didn't expect or up. So, you know, it was Gurley, Peyton Barber was in there, Lamar Miller, Adrian Peterson, we mentioned already, Carlos Hyde. So it's basically handoffs are used game script dependently in the same way that kind of like long catch-up throws are. One thing we saw this week, though, a trend in the other direction that continues to kind of be picking up steam, is the highly targeted running back. You already talked about Chris Thompson. McCaffrey had 15 targets. Saquon Barkley had 16 targets out of the backfield. Theo Riddick had 12 targets once again. Or not once again. I mean, he's just a guy who's had a lot of targets in the backfield in the past. James White had 8 targets. Javorius Allen had 7. There were just a lot of running backs that were heavily featured in the passing game. And I think that's the direction this is all headed, that there are these the halves in the running back opportunity game going forward are going to be the ones that are heavily featured in the passing game. And those are going to be the ones where you find your floor. So it'll be guys like Gurley, who are on teams that tend to carry the ball a lot because they'll be up a lot. And then guys that are involved, whether the team is up or behind. And, you know, my arrow went back up on Christian McCaffrey in particular for this reason. And I'm curious to know if you're kind of feeling the same way about these targeted running backs.
Yeah, I wrote about McCaffrey going into week two. I was still pretty bullish on his overall, just what he could stand to, like, in terms of game script. I thought that he was still in a pretty good spot with them losing Olsen. It's still the reason he would just get more targets. That really did work out. They were playing from behind. I still don't think we have an amazing idea of, like, what their plan is with him if they are winning a game. Because and maybe they won't be. Carolina's also not very good. So maybe they are just going to be playing catch-up. And he only still only carried the ball 8 times. Was decent on those 8 carries. Averaged more than 4 yards per attempt. So I think they could see he still fits the... He's not the elite usage guy because the carries aren't there. But I think what we've seen is there just are very few guys we're going to be able to trust on a week-to-week basis in terms of just getting over, like, just penning them in for 20-plus touches. And I think that's Gurley.
Right.
I mean, even Melvin Gordon, this game they were winning, and Austin Eckler is still breaking off huge chunks of the yardage. And so he got the 2 receiving touchdowns, Gordon did. Still only carried the ball 9 times for 28 yards in a game they were winning pretty handily. So, and then the list, you know, after that, some of these guys, Kareem Hunt's still not going to play third downs really that much.
How much your boy Alvin Kamara? Same story.
Well, he's the next guy I was going to bring up because he is this one was pretty, it was pretty damning that he only saw third. He was. One, he struggled in running, 13 carries for 46 yards.
Back-to-back weeks now.
Saw 6 targets. Gillisley saw even more carries this week, which is a trend that you really, if you're bullish on Kamara, well, it's harder to be bullish on Kamara when you see Gillisley getting more snaps and more carries.
I'm always sure suspicious about this. Like, we've seen it way too many times now in the NFL where teams just get an opinion of a guy. Like, you just get labeled, you're not the 3-down back, and then you're just not the 3-down back. Like, we've seen countless guys with big talent run up into this. Reggie Bush, actually Jerick McKinnon, it turned out to be possibly for good reason because a lot of these guys that are really fast, really great catching the ball, they just don't have the endurance to just smash through the frankly, almost no one on planet Earth has the endurance to smash through the tackles 20 plus times a game. And you already have a short shelf life. But yeah, Kamara, not looking like that guy right now.
Well, when Gillisley, here's the one thing. When Gillisley comes in, you just know the Saints are just going to run the ball. He only saw 9 snaps and carried the ball 8 times. So when he's on the field, I mean, the defense just doesn't know that they're handing it off to him. I don't really know what to tell you. Kamara was not in the top 4. No, top. He was 3rd in position players in terms of snaps at only 51. So I think out of 66 offensive snaps for the Saints. So I think you are a little bit concerned about whether or not they plan on giving him the ball 20 times. I just don't think that's going to be the plan, at least on the ground. And maybe we're just in a scenario where there's just so few of those guys anyway that Kamara's upside in the passing game still rates out high enough that we can consider him on a week-to-week basis for cash. It's getting really close to, at this point. It's so funny, too, because they end up getting another decent matchup this week against Atlanta in the Dome in a game that could also just turn into a shootout. And his price did drop a little bit on FanDuel. He's down to 8,700. And I was just looking up real quick what his price was on DraftKings. He is still probably not. He's 9,500 on DraftKings. I don't think you need to go there just because he's just not running the ball enough. Whereas like Gurley's 300 less on DraftKings. I think that's a pretty easy call to just say Gurley for 300 less, call it a day, and not really worry too much about it. But yeah, I just don't know. Like I look, are we going to see more guys with carries over 20 yards or 20 carries this week? Probably, just because certain games will just end up working out that way. And there's just not that many great running backs. I don't really know another way to put it. Like, even guys like Yeldon, who were come in with Fournette, they just didn't.
Hold on, you're telling me Yeldon is not a great running back?
Well, I kind of segued that wrong. Guys who looked like they were going to get the bulk of the usage for their team because of the situation they were in, it just didn't work out that way. You know, Pittsburgh fell down too early for James Conner to ever start running the ball. They were down 21-0 or whatever before the game even started, so that was kind of the end of him. I wouldn't be shocked if they, you know, got up in a game for him to just go right back to sort of elite usage carries. And they play on Monday night, so it's not as big of a deal because it's not going to be on the main slate for us. But yeah, I don't know. I'm of two minds of running back, and I think that mostly where I fall is there are only maybe two running backs that are on good teams that get the ball all the time, and that's Gordon and Gurley, and even Gordon maybe becoming a question. And that all of a sudden that list is looking pretty damn small.
Yeah, it's kind of Gurley and everybody else for me right now. Right. Just after seeing Alvin Kamara get that treatment. I mean, we went back and forth on this, you and I, and to your credit, you really stuck with the Gurley is greater than Kamara vibe. And, you know, I was kind of more on the fence and, you know, kind of persuaded by the opportunity and the potential game script, and it worked out gangbusters for us last week.
Right.
And man, I don't know how you feel. Like, I don't know what price is going to be too high for Gurley in a good matchup, given the amount of safety you get from him, given that it seems like any other week, like, I just don't recall any other time in our time doing this where I just felt like I constantly had to make excuses for otherwise good running backs as to why they just weren't getting their touches, you know? And even guys like Kareem Hunt. I mean, Kansas City finds themselves in about the best imaginable situation. He gets 18 carries and 75 yards. Like, if you're going to be in that situation and only give the guy the ball 18 times out of the backfield, like, I don't know. It's a crazy world that we're living in right now.
I take it back on Melvin Gordon, too, because I was low on his usage. This game, he touched the ball 16 total times, and Eckler touched the ball 14 times.
That's terrible.
Now, again, they were winning, and they just didn't need to really use him that much in the second half. And it's just, if that's going to be part of what your team does, and that's part of what your team does. Eckler's also been very good, so there's no reason for him to get less snaps at this point. If they're just looking to save guys, sure, or if they're smart enough to know that running your one guy into the ground is just not in a plus EV sort of move for your team in 2018 football, then Eckler averaging 7 yards a carry or whatever, and just 7 yards of reception or something, whatever he's doing, just some insane numbers, that's not going to, whether it's, he's running hot and it's not going to get him to play less. So I think you're right. I think we're looking at Gurley as basically like that only guy. Like, these other guys, like Elliott, his team stinks. Saquon Barkley, his team's awful. The Giants suck. Like, he might catch the ball 16 times. The Giants are so bad. So even seeing the other guys that have the talent, David Johnson's team's terrible. So these other talented
here's
guys.
Here's a stat for you, too. Just only three running backs who touched the ball 15 times or more averaged 4 yards a carry or more. Only three running backs that had 15 carries or more last week averaged four. And one of those was Joe Mixon with 4.0. He's out. Kareem Hunt with 4.2. Nobody was good carrying the ball last week. That's pretty scary.
Yep, and I think that we're going to see more and more of this as just teams, just it's just harder to run and it's easier to pass. This is the way the league's been trending. I don't want to go crazy overreacting to week two. And I know that when I'm auditing just certain teams, or just about every team this week, the high carries that anyone's going to get outside of maybe Gurley is going to be like 17. I'm still kind of feeling like I want to keep Connor in that area, just because I do think that this game,
everything went wrong for them. Yeah.
So crazily got out of hand so quick that I'm really not going to adjust his projection all that much. And he's not on the main slate, so it doesn't really matter. Any of these, now the receivers, though, oh my God, some of these targets, like the target share for some of these guys. Now, again, a lot of this is probably game script, but so two guys on Pittsburgh saw, Juju saw 19 targets and Antonio Brown saw 17 targets. So, okay, 36 targets between the two guys. Saquon and McCaffrey, you mentioned 16 and 15. I'm just kind of going in order. Then we had guys like Allen Robinson saw a ton. Chris Thompson, again, another running back, Thielen and Diggs were both there. Michael Thomas another week. I mean, where do we put Thomas now? This is 2 weeks in a row. He's like one of the few guys, I guess Brown too, these few guys that are now multiple weeks of just crazy elite targets. Are we comfortable keeping them at the very, very upper echelon? Is anyone else in the category with you? Like, is DeAndre Hopkins there? Is Julio Jones there? Are there any other guys? And you can feel free to disagree with me if you think one of these two guys isn't. But besides Brown
and
Thomas.
I think Thomas and Brown, and I don't think that's going to be particularly controversial. We already talked about the increase in running back targets. And really, like, three running backs with 14 or more targets, that's extremely unusual. And I'm just trying to keep my eye on that because it is a copycat league, Doug, as I say with my talking head, bobblehead thing, just a nonsense thing that you can say. But it actually is true. Like, the teams will copy one another when something appears to be working. And if your team kind of sucks, hey, pass to the running back a bunch and see what happens. It seems to be what people are trying to work on. But yeah, those non-controversial guys, I'm on board with. Another sneaky guy for me, 15 targets week one, 13 targets week two. Golden Tate, Doug.
Yeah.
28 total targets now. I think most people are aware of Thomas and Brown. What do we make of Golden Tate? Same quarterback as he's always had. 28 targets. Or is he a guy that we can start thinking about for cash going forward?
It's good. The target share is good. What's always going to help him is they cannot run the ball at all. And so when a team just can't run the ball, they are going to be playing from behind a lot, and they're just going to have to pass a lot. And that's really been multiple seasons now. We've seen this from the Lions and Stafford. So it's good. I think he runs. I love guys that run routes out of the slot more, and that's definitely what Golden Tate does. Yeah, I think it's fine. I think I get a little worried when they have two other pretty solid guys like Galladay and Jones that that there are other ways for them to attack through the air, and specifically because Galladay has actually kind of now stood out as another clear guy that Stafford also wants to throw to. I think that's my only little knock on Tate, and looks like they're gonna be playing from behind again. They're on
well, just lots of targets to go around. One thing, you talked about Galladay and Jones as a downside for Tate. I'm kind of encouraged by the Lions' approach this season. Jones 17 targets on the season, Galladay 21. It just seems like they just want to pass. They're just giving up. I mean, Theoretic again, 12 targets this week too, right. Seven last week. I think they're giving up on the run, and that's great for my fantasy purposes. So I'm not going to be surprised if I start putting in some more Stafford plus two receivers sort of lineups going forward too.
Just final thoughts, I think, before we get out of here. But we're going to be doing a lot of this on the game-to-game breakdown. But I think what you're going to see this week is a lot of cash game plays concentrated between or among just a few games. There's a couple games here with San Francisco going to play KC. That game's a 56 over under. The New Orleans going to play Atlanta. That game is a 53 over under. These games have so many more points implied than really any other game. 40, and then kind of a little bit lower down, 48 for the Chargers and the Rams. Those games just have so many more expected points than everybody else that I think that we're going to see heavy concentration on those three games, and we'll just kind of see how it goes. But that's kind of looks like how it's shaking out to me, because then there's a bunch of bad teams playing each other. But we'll go through more of this. And I know we didn't mention the Josh Gordon thing because I think we'll just – I'm going to wait. I'm going to give this – I mean, clearly he's getting traded to the Patriots. It's always probably worrisome, I think. If you're doing deals with the Patriots for guys, I would be worried that you're getting the worst side of the deal if the Patriots are on the other side of the deal. So we'll see what happens with Josh Gordon. It'll be interesting to see. I don't think the turnaround time is going to be fast enough for him to suit up this week. And if he does, I don't know, man. It would be an interesting kind of thing to try to flesh out. But anyway, we'll talk about that more on the game-by-game breakdown. We'll have that on Friday, and then Thursday, the day before, we will do cash game plays that I'm going to work on writing up today. So dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Go over to DFSR.com/NFL to get that free 3-day trial of our projection system, powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab. Free for 3 days, and then just $29.95 a month after that. Buddy, talk to you again Thursday when we roll through some cash game plays for FanDuel and DraftKings.
Peace.